it's part of our human nature to want to name and categorize everything. We find it difficult to cope with things that are beyond our grasp. In our first reading, Moses is at the burning bush, and God tells him that he will lead the Israelites out of Egypt and into a land of milk and honey. Moses says, "If they ask me, what is his name, what am I to tell them?" It seems like a reasonable request, but God's identity remains a mystery. God resists being defined and delineated by us. The only answer Moses gets from God is, "I am who I am." Moses' role will be to go to his people and summon them to follow the call of this God, a holy God, whom they cannot see, and an image of whom they won't be allowed to make, unlike the gods of other nations. They will come to know their God only as they follow Moses in the highly risky escape from slavery in Egypt. They will have to place their faith in Moses and in the unnamed God, whose very name remains shrouded in mystery, but made and kept promises to their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In our second reading, Paul warns the Corinthians not to presume that their possession and celebration of the sacraments will automatically guarantee their salvation. Their ancestors following Moses in the desert had experiences which in some ways correspond to our Christian sacraments, and nonetheless, they fell away. Conversion is not a once-off thing, it is a continual call to align our lives with the ever-deepening knowledge of the God who spoke mysteriously to Moses, "I am who am," and yet who later became flesh and dwelt amongst us in the person of Jesus Christ. In our gospel, Jesus resists the people's desire to want to know who to name and blame. Some people in the crowd around him want to know if when something bad happens, is it a punishment from God? They're referring to an atrocity brought about by human cruelty. Pilate ordered the massacre of a number of Galileans in the temple. They were sacrificing animals in atonement for their sins. That the blood of the Galileans and the sacrificed animals got mixed makes some in the crowd think that perhaps the magnitude of the Galilean sins had something to do with their tragic fate. Was it the hand of a punishing God involved? In response, Jesus invokes another deadly incident when a tower in Silla collapsed and killed people. There may indeed be sinful causes behind these events, but not on the part of the victims. Pilate, who carries out the violent execution of innocent people, represents a corrupt and evil system. The deaths of those who were crushed by the falling tower may have been caused by shoddy workmanship or construction shortcuts. When a prophet is prized over safety, there is certainly sin involved, but it isn't that of the victims. Jesus goes on to tell the parable about the fig tree to make the point that far from attempting to judge the sinfulness of others, everyone should interpret such events as a warning to take stock of their own lives, lest far greater disaster, eternal ruin, befall them. Without speculating in any way about punishment, he simply makes the prophetic point. These examples of sudden, unforeseen death serve as a warning that at the time, the space left for conversion may be short. As always, the urgency of the prophetic zeal of Jesus comes from his intense sense of what God wants to do for his people. As at the time of Moses and Israel, God wants us to be rescued from the destructive captivity that holds us bound and wants to set us free for life and for love. There's time for that now, but the opportunity won't last.